Drawing on his nearly two decades of experience on Capitol Hill in both the Senate and House of Representatives, Jeff Flake will be delivering the Michael and Kitty Dukakis Public Policy Lecture for MCLA, the Massachusetts College of Liberal Arts, on Thursday, the 1st of October, at 5 p.m. It is a virtual event. He will be sharing candid, thought-provoking, and engaging insights on today's political climate, combining anecdotes from his time in office, lessons from his New York Times bestselling book, Conscience of a Conservative, and insights on the importance of civil leadership and bipartisanship. Again, the event takes place on Thursday at 5 p.m. It's a virtual event for the Massachusetts College of Liberal Arts. You can find out more at mcla.edu. And we welcome former Senator Jeff Flake to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us, sir.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Very nice to have you. Well, give us a sense of, I know you are going to be talking about the state of politics in where we are. Well, that seems to be changing at every moment. I'm wondering of how you get a handle on it and what ultimately you want the message to be when you speak on Thursday night.
Well, there's certainly plenty to talk about, and you're right. Nobody would have imagined what's happened just over the last couple of weeks. But you have to always be ready for that in politics, particularly with the election coming up. And this could change the game. I don't think anybody knows exactly which way this new Supreme Court vacancy will cut. I think it will depend on how Republicans handle it and how Democrats respond. But it's certainly going to make it even more exciting than it was going to be.
When it comes to that fight, if you will, I mean, it looks like the Senate they have the votes, and it's going to happen. It seems unlikely anything will change that, correct?
Correct. I think that, my own view personally is that given what Republicans said in 2016, we should have waited. I just fear escalation. That, if you don't think that it can get worse in Washington, it can in terms of partisanship. And if Democrats are in a position, they may retaliate after the election by getting rid of the filibuster, for example, or packing the court. Some Democratic senators have favored that. And I don't want to see that, obviously. But you're right. Republicans have the vote. I think that she is certainly a qualified nominee, and she'll be impressive. I questioned her 2 years ago for the seat she now holds when she was confirmed, and she's well prepared.
When it comes to the makeup of the court and what it means for the future of the court, how do you feel about that?
Well, it's already a conservative court. There it was before this recent vacancy. This would put it, conservative, liberal, I guess is just the easiest way to classify it, 6-3. And so it would significantly change the landscape going forward for a while. So I think it is. I think Republicans attach great importance to that. So do Democrats. And so this means a lot, and I think it's that's why it's so important. That's why there's such attention on it right now.
Of course, the other major story breaking is over the president and his taxes. What do you make of the story, and what do you make? Well, let me ask you first what you make of the story, and is it a surprise to you of what you read in the New York Times?
No, nothing surprising at all. We had suspected that he was pretty good at avoiding paying taxes and that he wasn't as wealthy as he claims that he is. And so I don't know that it's a game changer, but it does prevent the president from moving on and going on the offensive. He famously just can't let things like this go. And so he'll be responding in ways that don't help his campaign. And it gives, maybe some independent voters more reason to question. So I don't think it's a real game changer, because most of us suspected what would be in that report or what were in those filings. But it does prevent the president from, having last kind of month he wanted to have.
Your book, Conscience of a Conservative, you, of course, that was a New York Times bestselling book. And your idea of I mean, there's many ways that I can come around and I'll just come out and ask you, but would you support, are you supporting this Donald Trump as president?
I'm not. I didn't support him the first time around, and I couldn't support him this time. That's part of the reason I'm not in the Senate now. I would have preferred to have done a second term, but I knew that in order to do so, given the way politics are right now, I would have to embrace positions that I simply can't embrace and condone behavior that I can't condone. So I'm very worried about where conservatism is, where the Republican Party is, because traditional conservatism, limited government, free trade, strong American leadership, those principles have been turned on their head. And I worry that this, you know, substituting kind of Trumpism for conservatism is just a dead end. It's a cul-de-sac for Republicans.
You came out earlier, I think it was in late August, and said conservatives are better off with Joe Biden than they are with Donald Trump. Why is that the case, in your opinion?
Well, as I mentioned, we're kind of in a demographic cul-de-sac. If we just simply play to the base, nobody denies that you can gin up an election win here or there, but anger and resentment are just not a governing philosophy, and it runs its course at some point. I think we saw that in the 1990s with Republicans in California. Pete Wilson wanted a second term. He couldn't get people excited about it, so he latched on to Prop 187, an anti-immigration measure that sounds a lot like the immigration policy of President Trump. It did manage to get Republicans excited enough and others to get out and give him a second term, but it really tarnished the Republican brand in California. And the consequence, 30 years later, only Arnold Schwarzenegger has been elected statewide as a Republican in California, and it'll likely be a generation before we have any more. And that's what I fear for Republicans. So it's not that I believe that Joe Biden is necessarily conservative, although on some issues, like conserving and preserving American institutions, the institutions of democracy, that used to be a conservative thing. He's more conservative than the president is.
Can you give us some insight as to why more conservative and Republican senators did not follow your lead and speak out against this president and the many issues and abuses that occurred over the last 3.5 years?
I think it's pretty simple. They want to stay in the Senate. And they know right now the president could pick up the phone or send out a tweet and generate a primary opponent that would take them out. That's where the party is. The party right now, as a whole, this is a subset of a subset of a subset, those who vote in Republican primaries routinely, they want someone who's all in. And they've come to define conservatism as, are you with the president? And so that's why. It's not for great love of where the president is taking the party. I think all of my colleagues know that there's no future in this, but they want to make sure that they have a future in the Senate. And in order to do so, they've got to be with the president right now.
But they may not have a future in the Senate. I mean, the Senate may very well go Democratic as a result of that attitude, right?
Oh, definitely. I mean, we could lose the majority, but many of these
individuals
still have their seat. Yes. So I think we're more than likely to lose the Senate this time. And so a lot of the issues that we, as Republicans find important, they may well be reversed. So these gains are pretty illusory, but it's difficult if you're in a position, if you're in the Senate and you have a reelection coming up, if you know that you can't get past the Republican primary unless you are right with the president, then usually you're right with the president.
What do you make of the Senate race in your home state of Arizona, which is obviously a much-watched race?
Mark Kelly, the Democrat, has run a smart race. He didn't have a primary, so he wasn't dragged to the left. In Arizona, you can't be perceived as too far left and get elected statewide. But you also have a tough time getting elected statewide if you're with the president and you're seen as a Trumpist Republican. There are too many independents and moderate Republicans who simply don't cotton that that kind of politics. So he has, according to polls, anywhere from a 5 to a 10-point lead. I think that's probably accurate. I think it'll tighten up. But unless Martha McSally finds a way to, create some independence and some distance between herself and the president on some issues, I think that we'll have results just like we did 2 years ago when she ran against Kyrsten Sinema.
Have you endorsed in that race?
I've not. I've not. I've focused on the presidential race.
Do you plan on endorsing in that race, or is it better to keep shut?
Not likely. I have enough on my plate right now.
When you look at the state, though, as a toss-up state, what does it tell you about the changes that you're seeing in Arizona and seeing in other states such as Wisconsin?
You know, if you look at Arizona, Arizona is still a red state, if you will. If you run a generic Republican who people don't pay attention to, maybe like a mine inspector or some position like that statewide, the Republican will win. We're nominally a Republican state, but you just can't be where the president is. That kind of, mean, angry resentment, just own the libs kind of politics. That doesn't play well in Arizona. I do think Arizona is shifting over time. Our demographics are shifting. But of immediate importance is to have Republicans who simply will say, I believe in limited government, strong American leadership, and preserving American institutions, and I'm a good and decent person. I think that will win as a Republican position nation or statewide.
Former U.S. Senator Jeff Flake is our guest. He'll be giving the Michael and Kitty Dukakis public policy lecture at MCLA. It is a virtual event happening on Thursday at 5 p.m. When it comes to where you are right now and just leaving the Senate, how disillusioned were you / are you with that institution?
I'm not. I didn't leave because I felt badly about the institution. I love the institution. I love the customs and precedents and traditions of the Senate. So I hope that they're preserved, like the filibuster. We need that. It's one of the last mechanisms we have that push the parties together in compromise. And if you want legislation that endures, you have to have that. And right now we're getting close to getting in a cycle where we just bounce back and forth between majorities, and each party in power will overreach. But I think we'll get out of that. And I do think that this is a fever that will break at some point, because it has to. And when you look at the things that we've overcome as a country, we've overcome much bigger things than this, obviously not with a backdrop of nuclear weapons and Twitter, maybe. But so we have a little different situation, particularly the way the media has bifurcated. But we'll get through it. And there are good people in Washington on both sides of the aisle. I just hope that we can get past this kind of anger and resentment that currently prevails.
And we're trying to get through the anger and resentment as we are globally up against a pandemic. And
right.
I'm curious as to what you make of not only the president's response or the way that has been handled, but ultimately how we move ahead in whatever direction that's going to be to get a handle on it.
Well, what's been disappointing is to see this pandemic politicized when it shouldn't be. I mean, wearing a mask should not be a political statement. And that's unfortunate. And that, I think, does owe to the leadership or lack thereof that we've seen out of the White House.
You know, it's a shame that it's been politicized. It has been politicized. So what do we do now?
Well, I hope unify. I hope we have either the current president or a new president in January. We'll say, hey, this is what we can do. Obviously, we have a federalist system, and there will be differences state by state. But here's some national leadership. To model good behavior. I think all of us have been disappointed at some of the behavior modeled out of the White House, talking about, how masks don't matter or they do matter, or just the flip-flopping back and forth just doesn't inspire confidence or much leadership. And also the testing regime that we've had here, 6-7 months in, that we still are lacking in terms of rapid testing, that can only be seen as a failure at the national level.
It is one thing that I don't quite understand. I mean, you talk about the politicization of the virus and of the response to the pandemic, but this disregard for science that we are seeing, in states like Florida, who have seen severe spikes and are now still loosening restrictions and bars and restaurants and for face masks. I mean, that brings us back almost to the question that we were talking about as far as Republicans trying to win in the Senate. What is the rationale for disregarding science when it comes to an issue as life-threatening as this?
Obviously, this has wreaked havoc not just on the public health, but on the economy as well. And I do understand governors like our governor here in Arizona who want to reopen. And I understand small businesses that are just losing their livelihood, and that hurts. And so I think every public official is trying to strike some balance. But in order to do so, you've got to realize that this virus is a thing of its own. We really can't control it, and we have to listen to science and understand what it's going to take. And if there is a policy that's different than the one we have, I'd like to see that articulated and stuck to. But this just kind of vacillating back and forth, and we're believing the CDC, but then we aren't, and it just doesn't inspire confidence. And this notion we're going to have a vaccine before the election against all reasoned science just doesn't inspire confidence and the kind of confidence we're going to need when we do have a vaccine to have enough people take it. So it is worrisome.
Is it empowering for you now to be able to say what you want?
I kind of said what I wanted when I was in the Senate. And that's why I'm here. I decided in October of 2017 that I wouldn't run. Now, I had 15 months in the Senate, not having to worry at all about re-election or what I would say. And just prior to that, I'd put my book out. So, I wasn't exactly quiet before. But obviously, when you're out of office and don't have to worry about anything, you can become freer with what you say. But not too much in my case.
Are you optimistic for the future, or are you scared as many Americans are?
I'm worried, just like I said, because we've not had this backdrop before of this situation of media and information, and it just reaffirms people's opinions and doesn't encourage or incentivize people reading broadly, the advice I always give is whatever you're watching, change the channel. If you're watching television, or if you don't do that, get out of your news feed. If you're a younger person, and then that's so we've not had this, and that makes me worried about how we get out of it. John Meacham, a historian, said the other day that in the Republican Party, you've always had 10-15% who were kind of in this conspiracy theory mode, the John Birchers of the 50s and 60s, and still a few around today. But he said, you know, that seems to be, you know, closer to 35-40% of the Republican electorate. I'll just speak for Republicans now. And that we've not been there before. And I think that owes to, you know, kind of the communications, the media, you know, backdrop that we have. And that makes me worried. But like I said, we've come through worse before. We've got to have leadership. We don't have that now that unifies the country. That's a necessary but not sufficient condition. But we need better leadership at all levels, not just in the White House, but in the Congress as well, that people who will look beyond just the short term, you know, will this win me the next election? You know, what's good for the institution? What's good for the future?
Former U.S. Senator Jeff Flake will be delivering the Michael and Kitty Dukakis Public Policy Lecture for MCLA on Thursday, October 1st at 5 p.m. You can find out more about this virtual event by going to mcla.edu, mcla.edu. Senator Flake, a great pleasure to have you on the program. I so appreciate your time and insightful answers.
You bet. Thanks for having me on.
Great pleasure. Thank you very much. Again, Jeff Flake giving the Michael and Kitty Dukakis Public Policy Lecture on Thursday, October 1st at 5 p.m., mcla.edu. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.